The String Quartet by Virginia Woolf. Well, here we are. And if you cast your eye over the room, you will see that tubes and trams and omnibuses, private carriages not a few, even, I venture to believe, landaus with bays in them, have been busy at it, weaving threads from one end of London to the other. Yet I begin to have my doubts. If indeed it's true, as they're saying, that Regent Street is up, and the treaty signed, and the weather not cold for the time of year, and even at that rent not a flat to be had, and the worst of influenza its after effects, if I bethink me of having forgotten to write about the leak in the larder and left my glove in the train, if the ties of blood require me, leaning forward, to accept cordially the hand which is perhaps offered hesitatingly, 7 years since we met, the last time in Venice, and where are you living now? Well, the afternoon suits me the best, though if it weren't asking too much. But I knew you at once. Still, the war made a break. If the mind shot through by such little arrows, and, for human society compels it, no sooner is one launched than another presses forward, if this engenders heat, and in addition they've turned on the electric light, if saying one thing does, in so many cases, leave behind it a need to improve and revise, stirring besides regrets, pleasures, vanities, and desires, if it's all the facts, I mean, and the hats, the fur boas, the gentlemen's swallowtail coats, and pearl tie-pins that come to the surface, what chance is there? Of what? It becomes every minute more difficult to say why, in spite of everything, I sit here believing I can't now say what, or even remember the last time it happened. Did you see the procession? The king looked cold. No, but what was it? She's bought a house at Malmesbury. How lucky to find one. On the contrary, it seems to me pretty sure that she, whoever she may be, is damned, since it's all a matter of flats and hats and seagulls. Or so it seems to be for 100 people sitting here, well-dressed, walled in, furred, replete. Not that I can boast, since I too sit passive on a gilt chair, only turning the earth above a buried memory, as we all do. For there are signs, if I'm not mistaken, that we're all recalling something, furtively seeking something. Why fidget? Why so anxious about the sit of cloaks and gloves, whether to button or unbutton? Then watch that elderly face against the dark canvas, a moment ago urbane and flushed, now taciturn and sad, as if in shadow. Was it the sound of the second violin tuning in the anteroom? Here they come, four black figures carrying instruments, and seat themselves facing the white squares under the downpour of light, rest the tips of their bows on the music stand. With a simultaneous movement, lift them, lightly poise them, and looking across at the player opposite, the first violin counts 1, 2, 3. Flourish, spring, burgeon, burst. The pear tree on the top of the mountain, fountains jet, drops descend. But the waters of the Rhone flow swift and deep, race under the arches and sweep the trailing water leaves. Washing shadows over the silver fish, the spotted fish, rushed down by the swift waters, now swept into an eddy where, it's difficult this, conglomeration of fish all in a pool, leaping, splashing, scraping sharp fins, and such a boil of current that the yellow pebbles are churned round and round, round and round. Free now, rushing downwards, or even somehow ascending in exquisite spirals into the air, curled like thin shavings.